Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hey, Dave.
Yeah, Randy.
Since we founded Bombas, we've always said our socks, underwear, and T-shirts are super soft. Any new ideas?
Maybe sublimely soft.
Or disgustingly cozy.
Wait, what?
I got it. Bombas. Absurdly comfortable essentials for yourself.
And for those facing homelessness.
Because one purchased equals one donated.
Wow, did we just write an ad?
Yes.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase.
Thanks for listening and being part of my podcast. I hope 2024 is kind to you. In my 27 years as a Victorian policewoman, I investigated everything from a stolen bicycle to a stolen life. Policing taught me a lot about human nature, which I explore in my podcasts with a mixture of interesting and thought-provoking guests discussing the human side and impact of crime on all those involved, including the investigators. And I'd love for you to give me a review if you can. They're just a great help to me. I give my guests the opportunity to tell their story in their own words and how they remember an incident. It may not be how others remember it, which I ask you to please keep in mind. My podcasts are not suitable for children and some adults for that matter. If you find yourself affected by my subject matter, contact Lifeline or any other support service or person you feel comfortable with. Thank you.
Parents don't have rights in the family court. It is not about the rights of the parent. The legislation is pretty clear in terms of the family court operates from the perspective and the paramount consideration is the best interests of the child.
Selena McCrickard has been practicing law since 1999. In 2004, she was accredited as a criminal law specialist and is also an accredited mediator. Sel is a passionate and experienced advocate, and she's worked extensively in criminal and family law in Victoria and WA. She's worked in the private sector, the Victorian Office of Public Prosecutions, Victoria Legal Aid, which we call VLA, including VLA's Public Defenders Unit, as well as a period as a barrister in Victoria. Sel has held management roles with Victoria Legal Aid and community legal centres in WA. After relocating to WA in 2018, Sel initially practised in the Pilbara and the Perth metro area, and now in the southwest, she appears regularly in court representing clients charged with criminal offences and those seeking to apply for or defend restraining orders. Sel also appears in the Family Court for parenting and property matters and represents clients participating in family dispute resolution conferences. Sel's a trauma-informed lawyer and understands the stresses clients experience when navigating the family court system because, unfortunately, Sel has experienced this on a personal level, so she really does understand the impacts. Sel is committed to trying to resolve family law matters in a timely way without those court proceedings where they just tend to go on forever. There's so much I'd love to chat to Sel about today because in my podcast and policing world, I've heard too many stories of those treated poorly by the court system, particularly in family court matters where the common themes seem to include humiliation, intimidation, and feeling demeaned by defence lawyers. I also look forward to chatting with Sel about representing an offender who's been charged with heinous crimes and how she navigates that, balancing her passion for justice but also understanding the hurt and trauma that person has caused in the community. And that's a community that Sel is part of as well. So thank you for your very precious time today, Sel, but I know you feel passionate about your cause as much as I do. So thanks for your time.
Thank you, Narelle, first-time caller, long-time listener. So it's very exciting to speak with you.
Oh, very clever. Okay. Now, for the listeners, Sel has done her best to keep her dog, her husband, and her son as quiet as we can, but we can't guarantee it, can we, Sel? We're doing our best.
We're doing our best. Actually, one of them, I'm just looking out my office window, the small one's leaving. So that'll cut down on about 25% of the noise.
And you know what? I think it's lovely of Sel to give us her time because it's 9 o'clock of a Saturday morning in WA and Saturday mornings can be pretty hectic. So we appreciate your time, Sel. So let's get on with it. Now, you contacted me during what you described as your sadness of hearing so many victim survivors of family and domestic violence, feeling just so unsupported by lawyers, and your concern of women listening who might feel that they have no legal support or trauma-informed lawyers to turn to. So I'm wondering if you can share with us a bit more about how you feel when you hear those stories, because there's a lot of them.
Look, there are a lot of them, and it's pretty devastating, I think, for a lot of lawyers, particularly lawyers that work in the family law and family violence space, because our style of lawyering, I think anyway, and as you said, I was admitted in 99, so things have come a very long way compared to what it was like when I first kicked off in the law, where things, I suppose it was, lawyers were very direct. The way that they wrote letters to clients or spoke to clients was quite confusing. They didn't really have a good ability to break things down into what I call bite-sized pieces and just really signpost, I guess, what the procedure is, how things will work, give a client time to have a think about where they're at, particularly when it comes to writing. I mean, you probably know in family law there's a lot of affidavits. Putting together an affidavit for a family lawyer is not dissimilar to what police do when they're putting together a statement. And a lot of that is, it's really hard going for a client because they're talking about things that they don't really want to talk about that do elicit a trauma response. So I've heard one of your podcasts when you were talking about your own triggers and the reaction that your body has to certain triggers, which is quite true. You know, our heart rate increases, concentration drops. And way back in 1999, there were a lot of lawyers that just didn't get that. Nobody really got it. And then the trauma-informed lawyer movement, if I can call it that for want of a better word, probably in the last 20 years or so, there's been a lot more work around understanding clients and where clients are at personally, what traumas they've experienced, trying to get an understanding of triggers and definitely that physical reaction that has so much of an impact on how we communicate with other people. So I realise in saying this that for somebody coming into the system right now, they're not going to see those advances, but as a lawyer, I definitely see those advances. And then I look at, I was principal lawyer at the Women's Legal Service here in WA for a little while. But being part of that organisation and part of the bigger organisation of the Women's Legal Services Australia, so many of those lawyers are trauma-informed. Well, all of them are really trauma-informed and are really working very closely with psychologists and specialised family violence counsellors to try and give clients a complete service that takes into account their experiences, family violence and other traumatic experiences. And it just seemed to me that a lot of the guests were like, well, this all sucks, and I get it, a lot of it does suck. Even in a trauma-informed way, it's not pleasant. But there are people out there, and there are lawyers out there and other non-legal services that will help. And the best way that we can all help a client is by trying as best we can to work together.
So would you agree that if there is somebody that, I suppose it's like any, let's say, professional, but let's say a doctor, a medical doctor or a psychologist or something, if you go to somebody and you just don't feel they get you or you don't particularly like them for whatever reason or they make you feel uncomfortable, I suppose, and would this be right in this field as well, that if that's the case, you shop around like you do a psychologist. You wait until you keep going until you find somebody that you just feel is the right click.
100%. And for people that, I guess, and, you know, that's a really good point, because one of the difficult, really challenging parts, I think, of getting a lawyer is if somebody is legally aided. So as you know, at the moment I work in private practice and our firm does accept grants of legal aid. In many sort of cases, you're kind of stuck with who gets assigned your grant. And there is a limit as to how many times someone can change lawyers when they have a legal aid grant. And there's a very good reason for that, because legal aid are trying to administer hundreds and hundreds of grants and assign people lawyers. The pool of lawyers that are agreeable to doing legal aid work is reducing, sadly. So that...
Why are they reducing?
Well, bluntly, I can say part of it is because of the pay. So, for example, at our firm, the founders of the firm that I work for right now were two twin brothers. And hundreds of, well, not hundreds of years ago, but a long time ago when they started the firm, which was a long time ago, one of them's in their 90s now, they had a real passion for helping people who didn't get easy access to justice. And part of that was pro bono work for First Nations people. They were instrumental in helping set up the Community Legal Centre in Bunbury. And we have always at our firm done legal aid work. And we do that because it's a choice, because we want to do it. But we do that knowing that the pay is much, much lower than what we would charge privately. And that often we're putting in really big hours because the cases are complex. They're hard because there's many different facets. So there's family violence. There might be a language barrier. There can be mental health issues, drug and health, alcohol issues, all these things that clients are going through, which is no fault of theirs and no criticism of them. But it can take a lot longer. Some of our clients are homeless, so sometimes it takes a long time to find them. So many firms have said, look, we don't have capacity for our lawyers to keep doing this work where we know that they're putting in above and beyond the hours that we get a grant for. Or they limit the type of legal aid work that they will do that falls better within their capacity. So for sole practitioners, for example, they might decide or they might be able to offer to legal aid certain types of matters because they just cannot do the bigger legal aid matters because they're so intensive in terms of administration and time with clients. But it's very needed work, you know, and these are the people who are really vulnerable, who really struggle for support. But in answer to your question, because now I'm going off on a tangent.
I encourage it, Sel, please. I love it.
You may not be saying that towards the end, Narelle. shut this woman up and get her off. So, but if you're paying privately, then yes, 100%. Don't just stroll into an office because someone says that you may like a lawyer or you've heard that the firm's good. Shop around. And I encourage clients to shop around. And sometimes they have shopped around when they've come to see me and I've sort of said, you know, what did old mate say to you when you spoke, and they give me a bit of an outline. And quite often we're all giving the same advice. All the lawyers are giving the same advice, particularly when someone's starting off in family law proceedings, because there's certain procedures, just stuff you got to do, yeah? Everyone's got to do it. But they may not like the way the person talks to them. And as you say, it might be nothing wrong with the advice, and often there is absolutely nothing wrong with the advice. That person and the lawyer just haven't clicked. But you gotta click. You gotta have some sort of relationship, as you would a doctor or a psychiatrist, psychologist, some other support worker from a specialized field. That's obviously where the best results will come from.
And I suppose if you are getting legal aid, as you say, there's only a certain amount of people you could go to try and find that click before you think, or before you're told, look, really, we're doing this. You're getting a pretty good deal. We just sort of have to stop. Like, I don't know how many choices you get, but you might have, I don't know, two or three, and after a while you think, you know what? I think we'd better call it. You cannot. There's only a certain amount of shopping you can do, let's say. I was just going to ask you, Sal, from a victim's point of view, when you go to a solicitor or a barrister, whoever it be, there's so much information, isn't there, that to take in, because generally these people, have never been in this position before. So I get about, I love the fact that solicitors and lawyers are being trained more about trauma-informed, about being trauma-informed, because I've got to say there just seems to me to be, and I know you don't like this, but I have to say it, that there just seems to be too many victims to ignore who feel they're not believed or their situation isn't taken seriously. And this includes us all. I'm not just saying lawyers. You know, it's police and the courts as well, which saddens us both. So where is the system falling down? Why is this happening? Is there not enough training? Is there not enough solicitors that are trained in being trauma-informed? I just don't know where it starts and where it finishes, to be honest.
I reckon that's a good question. But the answer is a really complex answer, because first of all, when we talk about trauma or triggers or flashbacks, we never know what they might be, right? So when you did your little yarn on your podcast about what your triggers were, me sitting here talking to you now, I would never have known that blue sports bags were a trigger for you. I would never have known that, right?
Yeah.
So I go to the gym. I have got a blue sports bag.
And everyone, trust
you,
yourself.
You've seen them all except for mine.
I do. I do.
So had you have walked into my office and my blue sports bag was there, you might have had a reaction to that. And I would have been thinking, oh, my God, what have I done? You know, and even if you weren't able to verbalize what the reaction was, if you're having, you know, the traumatic physical reaction, and then I'm in the nicest way possible trying to talk to you about your matter and where you're at. But if you're not focused and not with me and I don't know why, then that conversation is very hard, right?
Yes.
So sometimes I guess we're unaware of the traumas or the triggers. And as we know, that they can randomly pop up, they're very difficult to control.
Mm.
So that's one thing. Secondly, when clients come to a lawyer, there is so much stuff that has happened, right? So there might be 20 or 25 years of relationship that's come to an end where many, many things, awful things have happened, and that all comes out, which is completely understandable, totally understandable. And often in the first and second appointments, we're talking a lot about that stuff. So what I try and do is deliver small bites of legal stuff that we actually have to get done, because if we don't get it done, we can't progress the matter, right? We can't get started.
Yep.
And this is where I think it's really critical that clients have at least the opportunity, if they want to take it, to get outside non-legal support around trauma counselling, how in whichever form they feel comfortable doing that. So sometimes it's going to be through a GP. I know here at the Women's Legal Service in WA now they have got a specialised, I can't recall her background, but she's specialised in working with victims of trauma. At the Pilbara Community Legal Service where I work, they had specialised family violence support workers, yeah?
Yep.
So it is non-legal support, which may result in sort of medical, you know, intervention from a GP. Then there's a counselling aspect. Then if somebody needs assistance with housing, there are housing support workers. There's a whole bunch of stuff that lawyers cannot help with. We can point people in the right direction. And I think people get really, clients understandably, right, they start to get crabby with lawyers, because there comes a time, trauma-informed or not, we have to try and focus the client on what it is that they need to do.
Yes.
Because we may not like the system, but we're in it. And various things. And again, I reckon it's pretty similar to when coppers take a statement, that there's lots of stuff that a victim might think is relevant, and maybe it is relevant in part of that statement. But you as a copper and same as us, we've got to get some sort of chronology and order going. Otherwise, it's just a whole lot of words on a page. So those extra services, very necessary services, and I'm sad to say here in WA we've got a real shortage of psychologists and psychiatrists, which is a shocker, and I think that's probably Australia-wide, but, you know, we've got the extra challenge here of the tyranny of distance, because it's so bloody big and everything's so far away. So I know that it's hard, but if clients can take every service or support they're offered, and if there's family and friends that can help in practical stuff, right? And by that I mean, because the other thing that lawyers, it's very hard, right, to try and reassure someone when they've heard a lot of horror stories, and, you know, then they've heard what happened to the bloody mechanic's cousin when they got a divorce, and you've got to spend half an hour saying, but you're not the mechanic's cousin, and I don't know what happened to the mechanic's cousin, but we need to work on your case and look at your circumstances and get your matter progressing. So if you've got a family member that's really good at Excel, for example, get out your financial documents or speak to a financial counsellor, which lots of community legal centres have financial counsellors and other organisations have financial counsellors, and get that practical help. You know, if somebody can take the kids, just says to you, I'm going to take the kids or pick them up from school every day this week, take that help. You know, to ease a bit of the pressure so you can focus on the necessary jobs you kind of got to do to progress your matter. Sorry, I went on there, but it's, important.
I'd just like to take you up on that and agree with you. I think, and the same would happen with you as police, what happens is sometimes maybe people don't feel they're being believed or listened to.
Mm.
Because they are, let's say, being rushed, because everything is, particularly with lawyers, that you have time constraints. You can't sit and listen to somebody for 3 hours, and it would be easy for some people that have got that 25 years of relationship problems to just tell us, you and me, about all these things that really they're very relevant to the person that's telling us. But from our point of view, they're not really relevant to the reason they are with us. And I just sort of feel sometimes people want to tell their whole story. But as I said, it's not relevant sometimes. And even though it distresses them and upsets them, it's not that we don't believe them, but there's parts of it that aren't really relevant to why they're sitting in front of us, let's say.
100%. And I think even, you know, and look, I use these words and you've used them, even when you say not relevant, it sounds really shitty. And
yes, true.
And people think, oh, how can this not be relevant? I do try to, when I'm talking to a client, I don't say that. Right? But I say I try and focus them on the bits that I really need to know about. And I've got a couple of clients, or have worked with a couple of clients, who are just, they're gorgeous. They're gorgeous ladies, and they've come out of long-term, really crappy relationships. And when it comes,
here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
Life is full of what ifs. Some awesome, like what if AI could fold your laundry? And some, well, less awesome, like what if you have unexpected medical costs? UnitedHealthcare can help get you covered with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. They supplement your primary plan to help you manage out-of-pocket costs. No deductibles, no enrollment periods, and especially no more what-ifs. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
It's time to do the affidavit that I could do. And you get to know clients after a while, right? Because these matters can go on for a while. And they kind of get me and I get them, and they know I've got a fairly offbeat sense of humour, and I'll say to them, right, now listen, I'm keeping you on a tight rein today and this is what we're going to talk about. And they'll have a bit of a giggle, but they know where I'm at and they know what they need to do, and they've had that chance to sort of settle down, to get a bit used to the actual lawyering jobs that we need to do. And I think that's where it gets hard, and that's why so many people don't feel understood or believed. And it's like, we do want to understand, but, you know, particularly sometimes we pick up cases at very short notice, and it's only the initial bits of the case, right? It's the start. So as you know, lots of those hearings, they're kind of like housekeeping hearings. They're not the trial.
Yeah.
And, you know, there's just bits and pieces where the court wants to know, well, you know, Miss McCrickard, what's going on here? And you don't know really because you've just got the case. So we do get an adjournment. So for the start, often what you're saying to clients is, look, we're going to, or what I say, we're going to have a lot more time to talk about these things later. But for today, all we need to tell the magistrate or the judge is this, you know, that I've just got your case. We need some time. There's nothing serious, or that, you know, I often say, you won't need to give evidence today. You don't need to do any talking. Old mate's not going to be at court. It's just basically like an admin hearing. You know, it's like just telling people this is what's happening. And I've only just arrived as your lawyer or been appointed as your lawyer, yeah?
Yeah, yeah. And I just want to add something there. You brought up a very good point, and I just want to clarify. I would never say, and I know you're not saying this, I just want to put it out there, I would never say to a client, that actually is irrelevant.
Yeah.
I would think it. I would think it.
Yeah.
I would think that, no, that's not really relevant. And like you, I would I would steer a client to say, look, today we need to concentrate on blah, blah, blah. We'll talk about that another time or whatever. But I just want to say, I would never say that that's irrelevant, because you're right, that's a very offensive. You could get very offended by somebody saying that. Sal, can you share with us some tips on those who will be appearing in court, like a few, I don't know, do's and don'ts in family law matters? Can you just take us through some of them, some better tips for people?
I think probably the tips I've got, it's even before court.
Okay.
So often what can be, actually I just, yeah. So look, I just want to tell this story, lol, because I think it's really important. And again, when I was at the Women's Legal Service during COVID, and COVID, you know, here in WA, we went through nothing compared to what you guys over in the eastern states went through. But there were times that we had, you know, lockdowns, which lasted for like half a second, again, compared to you guys. But during those lockdowns, we started to really boost up our telephone service, so having telephone appointments. And one of the things that really struck me, and I just thought, this is amazing, was the amount of women that had called through asking for advice. They hadn't separated, but they wanted, I mean, and it's, obviously it sucks that they wanted to separate, but it was so smart, because they were basically getting their powder dry and using that time and space, because often here, you know, every second fellas, and generally it is fellas, not all the time, but is a FIFO worker. So suddenly they're stuck wherever they're stuck, and mum is on the phone saying, I just want a rough idea of what I need to do and what will be the first steps of the process if I decide to leave.
Yep.
And you know, that old saying, forewarned is forearmed.
Yes.
And it was really, really sensible. And I just thought, good on you. First of all, they gave themselves a bunch of time, right? So they weren't feeling under pressure, and they had some time to sort of plod along and get these things done. So one of the things, safety planning, which isn't strictly, I guess, the wheelhouse of lawyers, but most of the women's legal services, I think Legal Aid and lots of other community legal services, have safety planning available on their website. So what you need to do if you're thinking about leaving, which is obviously going to be different for everyone depending on their circumstances, but basic stuff like your important documents, birth certificates, wedding certificates, passports, financial documents, getting those, maybe leaving copies for the other person, sorting out your finances. So if you need to rent, you've got your bond, what you would need to commence a family law matter. And there are some excellent checklists available, right, for the sort of stuff that you need. So 6 months' worth of your bank accounts, what your income is, your pay slips, any joint accounts. And believe it or not, even the banks, like I think Westpac's got one, and I've got nothing to do with Westpac. I'm not generally a fan of banks, but I did like this, that because you can just jump online and download those checklists. You don't need to see a lawyer. And if you've got all that stuff and you've filled in a questionnaire, you know, Women's Legal Service here in WA have got a brilliant handbook about parenting plans and consent orders that guides people through these are the things that you need to think about. So if you're thinking about leaving and you have access to some of those resources, which many people do, even if they've got, you know, when I was at Street Law, people who were homeless would go to the library and look at this stuff. And believe me, you know, if you're trying to navigate the system generally, but if you're homeless on top of it, it's wow, you know. But they did it because they gave themselves time. And they were able to bring together this information, which is so important to get your case up and running. And they had an idea of the initial what family lawyers call pre-action procedure. And again, there's lots of CLCs, and sorry, I keep saying that, but that's community legal centres that will give free advice, you know. Legal Aid have advice, and again, when you can, looking at the resources that are online that are now written, they're very simple and they're easy to follow. Legal Aid's resources, there are different languages, so you can hit a button and the translate button. That has, in my view anyway, a very empowering effect on clients, that they've got a rough idea of what they're doing and they're feeling prepared when they first see a lawyer, and they're feeling, I think, and certainly clients have said to me, that they feel like they have a level of control then over their own destiny and over the start of what is, you know, their legal proceedings and their new life, different life, yeah?
Yeah, what about, I'm just thinking off the cuff here, but the women that are thinking of leaving and with their children, like I'm thinking to myself, like the men, I know I've interviewed a lot of men who are just devastated by the fact that they're lost access to their kids. But is there a system where, like the kids often are exposed to family violence, and I understand that, you know, the fathers have got as much, the children are half theirs. What do you do about the children? Like, how can you get around that? Because often the children are the ones that are the, they're exposed to this and they're just so affected.
Well, for want of a better expression, they're caught between the hammer and the anvil often.
Yes.
So, all right, how does that work? The interesting thing about the family court, and look, seriously, you could go on and we could go on and on and on about this.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
But in very short compass, parents don't have rights in the family court. It is not about the rights of the parent. The legislation is pretty clear in terms of the family court operates from the perspective and the paramount consideration is the best interests of the child. Now, there's a law reform, but the legislation's going to change shortly, which encompasses this and parental responsibility, which seriously, we could be here for the rest of the day. And I'd get my boss involved, who's actually a lecturer in family law. We could all chat about it. But the best interests of the child, amongst other things, one of the objects of that concept is to say these children or child of the relationship have a right, they have a right, the child or the children, to have a meaningful relationship with both parents. And again, I'm putting this in very short compass, where it is safe to do so, yeah?
Yeah, yep.
Now, if there has been family violence and there is a current restraining order and, well, over there, are they still intervention orders over there?
Yeah, intervention orders.
Yeah, so they're family violence restraining orders here, and I think in other places they're apprehended violence restraining orders, and anyway, whatever the name is, I'll just use restraining orders. But if there is a restraining order in place because of obviously family violence and the kids are on that order, whatever orders are made in the family court where they are inconsistent or where a family violence restraining order, I always stuff this up when I say it, is inconsistent with the, but you get what I'm saying, with the parenting orders, the parenting orders prevail. And the court will always come from the perspective of saying, look, in circumstances where there has been family violence, to fulfill the obligation of what is in the best interests of the child and the child having at least the opportunity to have a meaningful relationship with both parents, where it's safe to do so, what can the court do to ensure that relationship is safe? So that means sometimes dad's got to have supervised time in a contact centre or whatever, yeah? And again, I've probably gone off track again there, but in answer to your question, dad needs to get legal advice as soon as he can because that sometimes parents work it out themselves. There are very many, many couples that never go anywhere near the family court. Again, there's other options now, which means you don't need to issue proceedings straight away. And one of those is the very excellent dispute resolution program that Legal Aid have running, which is not part of the court, where both parties are represented by lawyers, so it's not a mediation where mum and dad just go along with a mediator. They have their lawyers. If you don't have a lawyer, Legal Aid will assign a lawyer. The mediators are very, very experienced family lawyers, which is super helpful. And something can be up and running very quickly for dad to see kids. But dads are also, you know, the dads have got to do something and sometimes they don't.
I suppose there's lots of accusations that fly around in court and between both parties. I'm not just saying it's all about the woman or the man, but does a court ever seek to verify or ask for confirmation with, you know, some certain information that a party to the proceedings might be providing?
Yeah, so it's a tricky one in this sense. Look, you and I both know, right, in a criminal proceeding, and I'm, you know, most of my background has been in criminal law and criminal trials and all that sort of stuff. And I get very frustrated with the family court.
Really? You're not alone there.
Lol. I know that may shock you. But, you know, coming back into family law here in WA as a solicitor advocate, right? So I used, when I was a barrister, and even the barrister set up here in WA is different to back east. But back east, as a barrister, you get briefed by an instructing solicitor and you are doing the court side of things and you read the brief and you read some of the relevant sort of correspondence and whatnot, right? But you're not Johnny on the spot as the barrister of writing the letters and the to and fro between lawyers. And I remember thinking, one of my very good mates, who also practices in crime and family law over there in Victoria, I said to her, oh, God, these letters, it's on and on it goes, back and forth over bloody rubbish most of the time. And she said, oh, well, you know, you've clearly forgotten. And it's like, clearly I have. So really, how can we short circuit these things? It is very hard to short circuit things in the family court to the point of, let's test the evidence now. And I know, look, there's lots of stuff around people being cross-examined, and I'm not minimising that. I'm just trying to shorten what I'm saying and not go on like the babbling brook, even though I'm going on like the babbling brook. You don't cut to the chase. It's not as quick to cut to the chase, right? And so there's all these letters and there's affidavits and there's very small hearings and there's hearings or steps in the family court specifically designed to try and resolve matters between the parties, where a lot of that affidavit material in essence becomes irrelevant for a conciliation conference or a dispute resolution conference, irrelevant insofar as if there are safety concerns, that's different. And by this stage, often what's occurred, and indeed what occurs at a first hearing, there's a family consultant that's present with the magistrate. And a family consultant has essentially a psychological, I've said that wrong, but you know what I mean, background, social work background. They're employed by the family court. They work with the family court. They look a lot at interview mums and dads, look at family dynamics, assess from an independent viewpoint what mum says, what dad says about impacts on the kids. This is very early stages, but at that first hearing, they can and do ask for prior history from WA Police for both parties. If there has been any involvement by the Department of Communities. So already there's kind of an independence there of let's see what's gone on, which is why I say to my clients, don't try and sugarcoat anything because they'll find you out and they'll find you out at the first hearing.
That's true.
Then independently verifying what someone says in an affidavit, sometimes that's pretty easy. because often in family violence situations, one of the parties has been charged, or there is a current family violence restraining order. Then later in proceedings, there can be a single expert witness appointed that again is looking, and I'm saying this, it's fairly cursory what I'm saying, but again, examination of safety, history, dynamics. And then, of course, the ultimate kind of test, if you like, of validity of what someone is saying is cross-examination.
Yes.
But, and, you know, I reckon my view is a pretty controversial one. In the family court, and I don't do a lot of this work anymore, but also in kids' court department hearings, so not the criminal jurisdiction, but child safety, child welfare and all of that where the department's sort of involved, it all operates off affidavits, right? And affidavits drive me nuts because they're generally full of hearsay. And they have interim hearings, so and this happens in the family court, and then everybody's arguing about what's in someone's affidavit and nobody gives evidence. And while I accept that giving evidence is awful and being cross-examined is awful, very often that is the absolute best way to see the demeanour of a person and to hear them give the evidence in their own, you know, words, obviously. Which is very different to how stuff's written on paper, you know, and no doubt you would have experienced this when you're a copper. You take a statement and the statement, you read the statement and think, oh, my God, that's terrible. But then when somebody is giving that evidence, it's like terrible multiplied by 1,000 often, yeah, because it's so raw and it's so visceral. And it's an awful experience often for the person that needs to give the evidence, but in my view, that is really where the rubber hits the road. That's probably a really awful expression, but I like it. Do you know what I mean? It's ground zero. It's like not all of this fluff around affidavits and. I spend hours whinging to my colleagues about interim hearings and affidavits.
and I think you're justified. I think the only issue, and like you said, we could go on about so much with just that that part of the conversation there, but I suppose I don't like what I hear about so many victims when they do get up in court to give their side, you know, to be cross-examined. Where they are made to feel, they're demeaned, they're humiliated, like it happens, ridiculed, you know, it happens a lot. And I think that's what upsets me about cross-examination. To me, it doesn't seem fair because the person cross-examining, like yourself, you are so well-versed in the law and how to... Oh, I don't know, mate. I don't mean you would do this, but how to upset someone because they are being tested when they are giving evidence, you know. And I just feel it's a bit, it's not level. Next week, we discuss victim impact statements and the difficulties a victim often has when parts of their victim impact statement are redacted. We discuss a typical conversation when an accused person walks into Sel's office seeking advice. And she also talks about keeping distance and not becoming emotionally involved because her role is to advise and assess the evidence. And a heads up, we discuss her role in representing Brendan Sokoluk, the man who was responsible for the Black Saturday bushfire in Churchill, Victoria, where 11 people died, 145 houses were destroyed and over 25,000 hectares burned, and how she managed the community's expectation and her own, as she has close connections to the area herself. Sel takes us through how she navigates her way through her role, balancing her passion for justice, but also understanding the hurt and trauma that person has caused in the community. And that's a community that she is part of as well. Anyway, have a great week, and we'll talk next week. As you've probably noticed, we've moved to a new platform called Acast. I think that's the right expression, I've got no idea. And my previous reviews haven't transferred over. I need reviews. Could you do me a favour and put up a review? And thank you so much for your support and patronage. With your help, I can give you that little bit extra. Thanks.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. WarbyParker.com/covered.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.